morning. The next case on the court's calendar this morning is in the matter of the welfare of the child of TT and TZ Senior, parents who are appellants. Is there going to be a splitting of time between mother and father's attorneys?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what is that?
We're going to split it evenly.
Evenly? All right. Thank you. Same for rebuttal then?
Yes.
All right. Would the clerk note that? We are then ready for arguments. Would each of the attorneys be sure to state his or her name for the record before presenting argument? You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Winkler. I'm attorney for appellant TZ, the father in this matter, and may it please the court. I would first like to turn the court's attention to the order, the CHIPS order in this matter that was filed on November 28th, 2018. In that order, it's based on the admission of mother that the child was in need of protection and or services based on her mental health, in particular her drug issue. However, father did not make an admission at that hearing. There was not a trial held or a hearing held presenting evidence as to why the child was a CHIPS as it pertains to father. And in that CHIPS order, there's no findings that pertain to father whatsoever. While findings in a CHIPS matter are not always required to terminate parental rights, Minnesota Statute 260C.301 Subdivision 6 provides that previous findings are required if the basis for termination is that reasonable efforts to reunify have failed. And in this case, the court did find that reasonable efforts had failed as it pertains to father and terminated his parental rights based on that statute, which, given the lack of findings, is inappropriate.
Lack of findings in terms of his parentage? Is that the argument you're advancing?
That's correct.
I think what we struggle with as an appellate court is our review of the record doesn't show that you raised that issue with the district court. And if so, why would we recognize it here and consider that as an argument to defend against the termination?
I would say, and not having presided at the trial court level, but that regardless of whether it was presented as an issue, it's a statutory requirement that previous findings are in place before reunification can be considered as a purpose for terminating. And in this case, there clearly were not those findings, as it's a statute.
Where did you argue this in your brief, Mr. Winkler? I'm looking at your brief right now, and when you started raising that, I mean, I've been through the brief. I don't remember this argument or whether it was raised by you, whether it was addressed by a respondent. Was it?
I believe I skirted around the issue itself in my brief, as I did not have the statutory language at the time I wrote my brief and only found it afterwards. It's subdivision 6.
Well, how could the respondent be expected to respond to this if you never raised it in your brief?
Your Honor, I raised the issue as it pertains to a lack of findings, as it pertains to father, and that the reintegration efforts with father were lacking on their other reasons. So I certainly raised it as an issue, but I did not cite to the specific statute that provides that previous findings are required.
Well, the thing I struggle with is if you're raising this, if we chose to address this issue and dad is saying I didn't have a recognition of parentage, I wasn't adjudicated father, so these proceedings against me were not correct. He participated in the proceedings, and I know he was incarcerated a lot of that time, but he did participate. And there's something that just does not work with participating in a proceeding and then saying, oh, what, I don't have the correct title.
Yes, and
if he's disputing being a parent, then what's the point of appealing a termination of his parental rights? Because if he's not the parent, what does he care?
He would care because if he is determined to have his parental rights terminated for one child, it can be terminated for future children as well. His argument isn't that he's not the father in this child. It's that there's specific statutory language that defines what a parent is under the termination statute.
It sounds to me like you're arguing both sides of it. I'm the parent, but I'm not the parent. I didn't raise this issue during the proceedings, and I don't know that we necessarily can address that as we go forward.
Okay, understood. I would say the only addition that I have on that issue is, again, what the statute requires as far as determining what a parent is. It is not the argument that he is not the father. That's not the argument that he's making. However, if the court does not consider the findings in this matter, there were 71 findings in the TPR order, 17 of which made a reference to father. 11 of those 17 have to do with reintegration of child and parent, and specifically the case plan. The remaining six that don't have anything to do with reintegration or the case plan are the father's name, that he has other children, that he was incarcerated during the proceeding, that he had a probation violation, he assaulted the mother, and didn't testify at his trial. And from those six findings, the court essentially concludes that the father repeatedly refused or neglected to comply with his parental duties and is palpably unfit. And I would say that the findings are insufficient to make any of those determinations, and that the record at large is also insufficient to draw those conclusions. A key component that is lacking regarding the record as a whole as it pertains to the other statutory criteria is what exactly was the degree of harm or what harm actually occurred to the child due to father's parenting. This court has found that in addition to one of the enumerated child protection grounds having to exist or be in place, that the child is in need of protection or services. In other words, it requires a statutory basis and that it triggered an out-of-home placement due to some harm actually being caused to the children,
so
or child
week,
in this case.
A week after the child is born, father is found driving mother and child under the influence of methamphetamine, and his probation is violated for that, and he goes to jail. That's not conduct that would suggest a danger to the child in terms of parenting?
The father tested positive for use of methamphetamine.
Jail because of it.
Yes, for a probation violation for testing positive for use of methamphetamine. It was alleged that he was driving the child and mother. That was never confirmed. It was never confirmed that he was actually under the influence of methamphetamine when he was driving, only that he had a positive test.
Any amount of methamphetamine in your system, you can't drive.
Again, that was an allegation that was never substantiated in any way. The probation violation was because he tested positive, not because he was operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of methamphetamine.
Well, he could have clarified that at the trial, but he chose not to testify, and the court drew a negative inference against him. I mean, what would be incriminating about that? I mean, he'd already been punished for it, so he kind of made his bet on that issue, it seems to me, to try to contested at this point when he had plenty of opportunity to do that and no exposure criminally. It just doesn't make any sense to me to now argue that somehow that couldn't be considered as negative behavior in terms of the welfare of this child.
Yes, I'm not making the argument that there was not some degree of negative behavior in here. I'm asking the court to look at the statutory criteria, which requires a pattern of behavior or specific conditions that existed at the time, and what exactly that pattern of behavior or conditions were.
Well, then a couple of months later, he beats up the mother in front of this infant child, and goes and pleads guilty to that, and goes to jail for that too.
Again, the record doesn't indicate that the child was in the vicinity or witnessed the assaultive behavior of the father. But I concede your point on that issue. As we are splitting time, I
have a question for
you,
if you don't mind. And we didn't get to this, but as far as the reunification efforts, I want to know if there's anything in the record that I didn't see it in your brief that you argue that the reunification requirements were not available to him because he was in prison. That's not your argument, that he was thwarted from having parenting ed classes or anything like that. Is there anything in the record that says that was an interference? Do you get what I'm getting at?
I do, and I believe I had indicated in my brief, and I certainly am of the position that there it was certainly interfering. The court's findings regarding the availability of treatment opportunities for the prison for Father while he was in prison explicitly say that there was no indication that these services that were required of him were actually available. What if individual therapy was available? What completion of individual therapy would look like? Whether a parenting mentor was available to him?
But he didn't complete the therapy. He didn't get a parenting mentor. We don't know if that was available to him or if he just didn't complete it.
Other than the findings at the court indicating that there was nothing in the record to suggest he could. We do know that he could not participate in chemical dependency treatment because he did not qualify. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, my name is Laura Reynolds, and I'm the attorney for the mother, TT. I want to first start by saying I will waive argument on the days calculated for out-of-home placement. I will concede that even if the date of the second petition was used to begin the calculation, the permanency petition was within the timelines per Minnesota statute, section 260C.503, subsection 1, parentheses A. First off, I'd like to address the Blue Earth County Social Services response to the issue of res judicata. My argument was that the first trial that occurred in 2018 in September had an order, and I did file it for the court, and it dated 9/18/2018. Had adjudicated and decided some of the alleged allegations, and some of them were found to be without merit. And my argument is that some of the order and allegations that continued on with the second petition were found in the final order findings of fact, which is in the order dated filed in 10/15/19.
I guess my question on that, Ms. Reynolds, is not to the basis for the argument, but why does it really even matter for our consideration of the overall case here? I read the argument. I read those findings. I think it's three or four findings out of the total order, and the court really based the vast majority of its findings on the new allegations in the second CHIPS petition. And the failure to follow the case plan. It seems like that was really what the court's order concentrated on. So I was having a hard time understanding, even if we agree with you on the res judicata, where does the order otherwise fail?
Your Honor, that appellant, my client, would ask that the court look at the findings and how they're repeated and as if they are still in question. They're based in the final order. It does not clarify that there was no drug use when the baby was born, no evidence of that. The TT was discharged from the hospital, and the first order clarified that she had some of her housing changed. They make it sound like she was trying to evade social services just for them to tell her that there was no drugs found in the system. I guess the argument is that they are repeated in a manner that would suggest that this was an unexamined issue, and the allegations from the first petition were found to be without merit. Also address the issue with some of the concerns of social services with the father. Once the child was placed into foster care, TT never was allowed to have unsupervised time, so this child was never exposed to any behavior with TZ or the interactions between the two of them.
Mother canceled numerous visits with child, at least half dozen, 10 visits.
And Your Honor, that is the case in the first months of the petition, and that's one of the concerns also raised in the brief, is that the reports consistently showed improvement. Once she did admit at the pretrial hearing in November to having chemical dependency issues, and she was established in drug court. And if you look at the report in April, the court report that's on file as an exhibit, she had not missed any appointments. She had not missed any visits. I believe the parenting time supervisor talked about supervising over 75 visits. The missed time was in the beginning of the case when she was taking care of her legal issues and getting back on probation. Again, the basis for the termination was also she was not providing a safe and sober home. The order from the court.
The part of the safe home, it follows up on Judge Flory's comments that she had this relationship with father and that was domestic violence and there's a child involved. So how did she address that?
TZ, the father, was incarcerated from, I believe it was September 2018 and through the trial. He was not around the child or TT. I don't even know if there was any visits with the father. There was no information presented at trial that anyone witnessed any domestic violence. I believe there was at least three or four witnesses that testified. They had no concerns about the safety of the child with TT. They had never observed any predispositions to this. Even the Barb Carlson said her results of her parenting assessment came back that she was not predisposed to be physical with the child. Again, the TZ was incarcerated, and I believe the incident that the county was concerned about happened right prior to him going to jail.
But the record was replete with emails between mom and dad while he was in prison that, and I read many of them, and they were very troubling, quite frankly, in terms of mom's attitude and the manipulative behavior that dad was expressing in those emails in terms of accusing her of cheating on him and things like that. It seemed very controlling to me, and I think and the court, I think, found that troubling too in terms of whether or not that continued relationship that she wanted to maintain and her judgment in wanting to maintain that was going to endanger the child, looking at just how that relationship was represented in the way they communicated with each other.
Yes, and there were some email correspondence that were presented. However, there is also evidence that TT completed classes for domestic violence through CADA. She was cooperative with doing that. There was no testimony to suggest any expert in the field of domestic violence had any concerns about how this correspondence with TZ would affect the child.
Well, the correspondence seems to imply that she doesn't get it, that she doesn't understand this is domestic violence. That's a comment. That's not a question.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, I do see where the county, you know, verbalized some of the concerns, but it was based on concerns, conjecture. I don't believe it rises to the level of clear and convincing evidence that the child would not be safe with TT. There is some concerns about her housing, but also there is descriptions in some of the court reports that she had to stay in Le Sueur County in order to qualify for the drug court, which they were conditioning her progress on. She was staying with her mother from the beginning of this case back in when she came to admit in November in an intergenerational home. There was concerns in the
counsel. I think you're over your time. Could you wrap up your argument?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor.
Reviewing the facts.
Your Honors, again, in the court order, I do not believe the court found that there was clear error. There's many references to her not providing a sober home. She had no positive drug tests. She had completed the majority of the case plan, and I do believe that the court erred in their decision to terminate her rights. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court,
Counsel. My name is Susan DeVos. I'm an assistant Blue Earth County attorney, and I'm here today representing the respondent, Blue Earth County. We're asking the court today to affirm the district court's determination terminating the parental rights of both the father and the mother of the child, TZ Jr. This court looks on appeal at the findings of fact to determine whether there's any clear error. In this case, there was not. There's been none identified by either party in this case. The court also looks at the statutory factors and determines whether in applying those facts to the statutory factors, the court abused its discretion. In this case, the district court did not. The court found there were four different bases on which to terminate both parents' parental rights.
One of which wasn't pled, neglected and in foster care. So I think we can just set that aside. I think our case law is clear that if you haven't pled it, the court can't rely on it. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, that's true that it was not pled. I do think that there is supporting basis in the findings of fact by the court that does support that statutory basis.
But I think it's a due process issue in that they were given no notice that that's what they were being accused of.
You're correct, Your Honor.
That's the way we've kind of come down on that issue.
That's correct.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't want you to waste a lot of time on that argument because I don't think there's merit to it, quite frankly, if you haven't pled it.
Thank you. I appreciate the court's explanation. But the court does need to only find basis for any one of those statutory factors, and I understand this, the court is throwing out the fourth of those, but there were three others that were pled that the court did find basis, statutory basis, for terminating parental rights for both parents. The father here today has raised some issues with regard to his parentage. Those were essentially rejected by the court here today, and I am here to say as well that was not something that was raised below. I would ask the court.
Do you believe that those are waived?
Yes, Your Honor. I would believe the Yodley Stitch requires the court to reject those arguments, and notably, those were never raised below. Then with regard to a pattern of behavior is one of the other issues the father has cited as an issue that was not found for or was not there for him, did not exist. And in this case, the court correctly noted, there were numerous criminal behaviors that were happening after this child was born. This is not a case in which the father was imprisoned the entire time of the child's life. This father went to jail and later to prison after the child's birth, and those were all actions that happened after the child's birth. So those were patterns of behavior. That the record also indicates that once he was in prison, he continued his behaviors, and some of those resulting sanctions made him unable to get employment, for example, while he was in prison, and that was one of the requirements of the case plan. Blue Earth County did develop case plans for both parents, including the father. There was some testimony by Ms. Schirmers at the court trial that indicated that she did talk to his prison case manager about some of the services that were available to him. I believe it's on page 27 of her testimony that there's some references to discussing with his prison case manager whether anger management, for example, was available, and him, the case manager indicating, or the prison case manager indicating that it was, in fact, available. So there were a number of services, and as the court indicated, Mr. TZ did not testify and was not able to, or there was a negative inference based on the fact that he did not testify. So if he had wanted to explain that those services were not available to him, in response to that, he did not take advantage of that opportunity. So he did not take advantage of any of the opportunities that were there for him. He was expected to be released the end of November. With that expectation, he could have been making plans towards having a safe and appropriate home for the child. He did not do that. He frankly did nothing on his case plan other than participate in the parenting assessment, and that parenting assessment was essentially brought to him. It was brought to him at the Blue Earth County Jail, provided to him. He did not have to go anywhere or set anything up. It was arranged for him. So he did participate in that. He followed through with none of the services that were recommended for him. So at this point, Your Honors, I don't believe that he has made any efforts whatsoever. Blue Earth County made efforts in order to make those services available for him as best as possible under the circumstances, and he did nothing in response to that. With regard to TT, she did make some efforts in the sense that she did follow through with a case, or she did follow through with a parenting assessment. She did cooperate with some of the drug court requirements, but I will note that a number of the services that she cooperated with were related to the drug court provisions, and that drug court was for her criminal, separate criminal charges, not related to the CHIPS action itself. So, but a number of the things that she didn't do that were requirements of the CHIPS action were required both by the case plan itself and then the parenting assessment, which the case plan directed that she follow through with all of the recommendations of the parenting assessment. She was asked to do individual therapy. She refused to do that. She refused to follow through with a neuropsych evaluation so we could have determined if there were additional services that perhaps were missing. But she needed to follow through with that assessment, and she did not do that. And she did not follow through with the ARMS worker, adult rehabilitative mental health services worker that could have helped her with additional services. That worker will come into a person's home, work with you on your specific needs. She refused to do that as well. So while she was testing clean through the drug court program, she was essentially refusing to cooperate with all the additional services that were provided by Blue Earth County Human Services. Blue Earth County Human Services repeatedly offered her gas cards, questioned what else we could be doing to assist her, and there was nothing that was requested of her that was not provided. There was some mention by Mother's attorney here again today about race judicata. I believe this court has looked at that in the past and essentially noted the fact in the Supreme Court as well that family law cases, much like CHIPS cases, are fluid, and there are some things that happen that changed the circumstances all along the way, and race judicata just really isn't appropriate. And again, as the court pointed out, really those...
Ultimately, the court needs to make a best interest of the child factor, and you'd need to rely on that information, wouldn't you agree?
I would, Your Honor. Some cases, it is necessary to look back at those cases. In this case, I do think the findings that are related to that underlying previous order are really not relevant to the bottom line and the decision of the court. And that decision, which relied, again, on looking at all of the issues that were there before the court, looking at all of the things that the both parents did, in this case we're referencing the mother, TT, but the things that she did and didn't do on the case plan and how those affected the child.
And I understand your arguments in that regard, Ms. DeVos, but as Ms. Reynolds argued, it really did look like a lot of the failings of mother, other than some of the neuropsych stuff, and that happened early in the case, and that when she did get involved in the more detailed programming through the drug court, and I'm a former drug court judge, so I have a good understanding of what happens there, she seemed to be doing better, but that at that point, that was discounted more or less. Is this case really driven by the timelines, and you know it was too little, too late, or how are we supposed to look at that issue? Because she did seem to be doing better in a lot of areas of her life by the time we got to the trial in this matter.
I would concede she was doing better in some areas of her life in the sense that she was not using chemicals, or at least she was testing clean for chemicals. She was cooperating with a number of the services through the Adult Drug Court Program in Le Sueur County, so I would concede that. But there were a number of areas. One of those I would highlight is her relationship with TZ. That had not changed. He had gone off to prison at that point, but as the court indicated, the record is replete with information that relationship had continued. So nothing had stopped there. She had made some gains in terms of getting some employment. By the time we had gotten to trial, she had lost that employment. And she had not followed through, again, with therapy. That was something that was outlined from the very beginning with the case plan. It was something that was, again, emphasized by the parenting assessor and just not done. And maybe some of those issues with relationships with Mr. TZ would have been resolved if she had done that, but she refused to do that. So she had made some strides, granted, in terms of her chemical use, and I congratulate her on that, but those strides were not enough to reunify with the child. And certainly timelines are important, but we were not at a point in which, in the reasonably foreseeable future, she could be reunited with her child. She had just not made enough strides and was not moving forward in any of the other areas beyond those in drug court. So at this time, Your Honors, I would ask the court to look most importantly here at the child. This ultimately, although we have to look at the statutory factors which have been met here, no clear error has been pointed out in the findings of fact. The court did not abuse its discretion in making its decision with regard to the statutory factors, but then we come down to the best interests. And the district court did look at the best interests of the child. The court has to weigh a number of things. The court weighs the best interests of the child in maintaining a relationship with its with the child's parents. In this case, this child has resided in foster care nearly his entire life. He entered into foster care when he was less than 2 weeks old. He's remained in foster care that entire time. Since that time, he's had some relationship with his mother, very little relationship ever with his father. At this time, the best interests on that factor do not weigh in favor of returning the child to his parents, biological parents. The second factor the court looks at is the parents' interest in, of course, maintaining that relationship, which in this case, they wish to do that, but they haven't demonstrated that throughout their involvement in this case. And finally, if there's any other factors here, and essentially, Your Honors, the primary factor is this child and this child's life. And at this point, we have a child who is nearly 20 months old who does not, has never had much of a relationship with his parents, and that is through no fault of the child. And I would ask the court to determine today that the district court made the correct decision and affirm the district court's findings and conclusions in determining that the three statutory factors that were pled, that those were appropriate. There's no clear error and no abuse of discretion in those decision, in that final decision. I'd ask the court to affirm with regard to both the father and the mother. Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. I would respectfully disagree with Ms. DeVos's comment regarding the reasonable efforts and the efforts that father made in this case. She had indicated that he didn't complete any aspect of his plan other than completing a parenting assessment. He also participated in the family group meeting. He did not have further criminal charges after the case plan was written for him. He did not test positive for drugs after the case plan was written for him. Regarding the reunification efforts as a whole, the caseworker, the social worker in this matter, indicated that she had one call with the father the entire duration of the matter. This court has found in the Welfare of Child of ARB that when there was no evidence that the company or the county attempted to explore any possible reunification-oriented services available during his incarceration, that reasonable efforts couldn't be deemed to have been made. In this case, he complied with four of the six obligations of his. The other two, maintain housing and maintaining employment. He was provided a single contact supportive housing coordinated entry systems as a resource to obtain housing, and one for the workforce center. These are the same recommendations that were made for mom. There's no indication in that one call that the caseworker did have with him. It was discussed as to the availability of those sources, how he was to access them, and how he was supposed to follow up with them generally. So I disagree that where he was limited as far as his incarceration concerns, his ability to complete his case plan, that is entirely upon him when he had virtually no communication with his county caseworker that is to be working on reunifying these parties.
Do you agree, Mr. Winkler, that from a legal point of view that the court could make these negative inferences against your client based upon his refusal to testify?
I believe negative inferences can be made. I don't know to what length those inferences apply, however. If it is assumed that father is simply wrong,
they could apply. The court made findings that there's no proof that he completed anger management. There's no proof that he did domestic violence programming. There's no proof that he has independent living arrangements. There's no proof that he engaged in counseling. There's no proof that he engaged a parenting mentor. Could the court make the legally make those negative inferences against him that he didn't complete those because he provided no evidence that he did because he chose not to testify. I mean, would that have been error for the court to do that?
I would answer that question by asking the court to consider finding 71 in the TPR order, in which the court indicates that father has failed to demonstrate that, I'm paraphrasing here, that father has failed to demonstrate that he should be parenting this child. I'm paraphrasing greatly, I believe, at this point. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, that is to the point where we're suggesting some burden shifting here, that it was father's obligation to demonstrate that he was an appropriate parent versus the county's obligation to demonstrate that that father's parental rights should be terminated in this matter.
The guardian ad litem and the case manager, though, testified as to what was done in completion of plans, both by mother and father.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Well, I'm just saying, you're saying the burden shifts, but the state presented its testimony through the guardian ad litem as well as the case manager as to what services were offered and how the services were fulfilled. So does that not put the burden then back on father to dispute what was said?
My review of the record was it was ambiguous as to what services were available to father while he was in prison. I don't think there was any demonstration as to what services were actually available made by the county. And I don't believe that a negative inference can be placed upon father to the degree that there does not have to be some demonstration as to the programming that was available to him to be in compliance with his case plan.
But didn't they talk to his case manager in prison? Ms. DeVos told us that in her argument that programs of that nature were available in prison. I don't know how that shifts the burden then, because the only way father will participate in them is if he wants to. But he provided no evidence that he wanted to do that or that he did. So I'm not quite sure how the burden shifts if they checked with his counselor or his case manager in prison and said, yeah, we have programs like that are available to our inmates.
My take on that is that it's simply too vague a statement to conclude that programming was actually available to father. Simply that programming exists within the penitentiary that inmates can participate in is not an indication that those programs were available for father specific, that they were appropriate for father specific, that they would treat the needs that were demonstrated through the case plan for father. And that's where I think it's insufficient simply to say that programming at a prison exists.
What about his disciplinary history there, though? That certainly would seem to may limit, because of his behavior, what programs are available to him. One of the reports I read indicated he had a razor blade, a single-edged razor blade, hidden in a toothbrush in his cell, and that was one of the basis for violation. Seems troubling, and I can see where that type of his own behavior may have restricted what was available to him in prison. That they would have allowed him to participate in. I don't know, maybe we're speculating, but it just seems like, I guess I'm not sure what it seems like. It just seems like there were programs there, but we don't really know any effort that he made to participate in them.
I will conclude by saying I appreciate the court's point on this matter, but again, I agree that it is by and large speculation, and where we're discussing a fundamental liberty interest in a parent parenting his child, I don't believe that is sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry about the delay. Your Honors, to address a little bit on TT completing her case plan, I think it's important to note that it's fairly common knowledge, especially in the type of work we do, about how intensive the drug court program is. The presenting issue that she agreed to was the basis for the child being placed out of the home was her drug problem. She was addressing it. Barb Carlson and Quickle and everyone else that testified at the termination of her parental rights, agreed that that was her primary issue.
But there was no objection, was there, Ms. Reynolds, to any of the provisions of the case plan that she was required to follow?
I believe that she had done the assessments for everything. What I would like to address is the difficulty and the reasonableness of this case plan. She was working full-time, and as probation officer or drug court person Quickle testified, she lost her job a week before the trial because of too many days missed from attending hearings, treatment programs, appointments, and it was not based on her performance. She had been gainfully employed this entire time. So she was attending drug court, she was attending AA, she was attending Love and Logic, she was attending her assessments, she was attending domestic violent classes, she was seeing the child regularly. And I guess I find it very concerning that this would be considered reasonable. It's logically not reasonable because a person only has so many hours in the day. She had stable housing. She was living...
Stable housing, but that was with her own mother.
Yes, yes. It was an intergenerational home. And that's one thing I'd like to point out is that the supervised parenting time continued at this home the entire time of this case. And both the guardian ad litem and the social worker that was on this case talked about their no concerns about TT's or safety for the child in the home. There was nothing brought up in trial that there was any problems there. I'd also like to point out when we look at the best interest factors that both the guardian ad litem and the social worker said they had not met with the family or been to the home for months prior to the trial. The guardian ad litem had never seen TT with the child. She did not address in her best interest of the child factors the importance of a child being with its mother. It is a presumptive, I believe in our state, that it is in the child's best interest to be with this birth parent. And I understand that the pattern or the paths diverge a bit as the CHIPS cases go on, whereas the parent's interest and the best interest of the child as days clock by that go in different directions. However, the guardian ad litem and the social worker testified that TT had been seeing the child regularly, three times a week at the time of the trial, and had been making a connection with the trial. There was nothing in the court record that suggested there is any attachment issues. No experts testified to that. And the parenting education person said she had no specific concerns. Yes, it took a little bit more effort to have some concepts learned, but she was making progress. If you look at the record in the court records, up until April, May, June, things were going extremely well. Then all of a sudden things stopped, and that coincides with the guardian ad litem and the social worker saying they hadn't even been to this home. So this is not reasonable efforts. And again, in the court order, there is clear error. There is not evidence that's available to suggest that TT failed to correct the conditions in the first statute under Minnesota Statute Section 260C3.01, subsection 1, parenthesis B2. She did correct the conditions. She was sober. She had stable housing. She had been taking classes. She was moving forward. The next one, there is no consistent pattern that was ever documented. All we heard up until the last month or two when they stopped even looking at TT and her relationship with the child was that she had been making progress. There was nothing in the court record that suggested any pattern of behavior that would make it an unfit and palpably unfit parent to or be a part of this relationship. They even said she was connecting with the child. And see that the third one, again, she did correct the conditions leading to the child's out-of-the-home placement. She had made regular contact with the child three times per week at the end of the case. And, yeah, she missed some visits, but, again, there was nothing in the court record that would suggest it was to the level of clear and convincing that she was not in a relationship with this child.
counsel. We've given you more than the time allotted. I wanted to be fair on it.
Thank you.
Everybody have the same amount of time, but you should. Is there any other point you'd make, or can
I'd ask the court to reverse this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the arguments. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within the expedited time frame required under statute.
Thank you.